Broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman on your radio. Hard-hitting news the networks refuse to use, no doubt, continues now. This is the broadcast for February 24th in the year of our Lord, 2022. This is indeed hour two of two, and the goal always to protect life, liberty, and property, and to promote God, family, and country in the traditions of our founding fathers. We reject revolution. We stand for peaceful restoration of the greatest country on the face of the earth. And we're delighted to have our dear friend back, Mr. Pete Sepp. He's president of the National Taxpayers Union. NTU, by the way, is the voice of the American taxpayer, mobilizing elected officials and citizens on behalf of tax relief. Boy, howdy, do we need tax relief. Not to mention tax reform. We got to work on that too, ladies and gentlemen. NTU.org. Pete Sepp, welcome back, my friend.
Always great to be here.
All right, there's so much going on in the world. It seems like we're talking about, Russia invading Ukraine. We're talking about the coronavirus. We're talking about the truckers. We're talking about all kind of things. But, Pete, certainly people are discussing taxes, aren't they?
Well, yes, they are. And I'd just like to give a special shout out and expression of prayers to my friends with the Ukrainian Taxpayers Association. I met up with those great folks 10 years ago in 2012 during a taxpayer conference abroad, and they hosted us subsequently for the World Taxpayers Association's biennial meeting. And sure wish them well during this very difficult time.
And ladies and gentlemen, think about that. Taxes are abusing people not only in America, but they're around the world. And let's be very clear about taxes for a second. We realize there is a legitimate need for some taxes to take care of the proper role of limited governments around the world. We understand all that, and we accept all that. What we don't accept is the inefficiencies that enter into the system, the dishonesties, and the lording over us, and the ever-increasing progressive taxes that seem to never end. It becomes, instead of a blessing to have the proper role of government to protect the citizenry, it devolves into really an abusive system, a system that lords over us and preys upon us. And so there's a balance that we really want to accomplish. Pete, do you want to speak to that for a minute? Because I think that's important to understand.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. We believe in the lawful application of taxes. We believe that taxes are necessary for many government functions. We believe, though, that government must be accountable in the way it levies taxes directly to the people who have to pay them. Government administration of taxes needs to be fair and just, as well as efficient. And overall, government must be accountable in the things that it funds with taxes. We can often debate what the proper priorities of government are, and we happen to agree, Sam, I think, that the Constitution's original enumerated powers are the ideal place to start in deciding what an appropriate role for the federal government and its funding should be. But all of this is lawful discussion about how taxes should be structured and how they should be levied.
Not only is it lawful discussion, ladies and gentlemen, not only is it an effort to create accountability, all those things are factual and true, but in my mind, the discussions all need to be with an eye on solutions. Because you know what? We can divide and conquer and battle and argue and yell and scream and kick and punch and do whatever we do, but at the end of the day, what have we accomplished? And so we also want to bring with the National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org, not only an eye towards reducing taxes, an eye towards tax accountability, an eye towards all these things, but we want an eye on, always, an eye on solutions. It's one thing to say, hey, there's a problem here, right? We want relief and reform. We get it. But how do we go about that in meaningful ways? And you know what? If we just complain, we don't have any credibility. If we, on the other hand, are working on solutions, providing analysis and information and data by which to make intelligent solution-oriented decisions, now we're getting somewhere, Pete.
Yeah, absolutely so. And that's what National Taxpayers Union is all about. We can go on and on about massive fixes that might involve constitutional amendments, perhaps taking away the 16th Amendment's power over taxpayers, and the fact that progressive income taxes are rampant across the country. Those might be important goals, but we can't lose sight of opportunities that are right in front of us to try to restore limited accountable government on behalf of taxpayers and better administration of taxes. You can just take a look, for example, at the Taxpayer First Act, which passed in 2019 with a huge bipartisan margin in Congress, was signed into law by President Trump, makes a number of important structural reforms to the IRS. It's the fifth such package that we have worked on at National Taxpayers Union since 1988. Is the IRS tame? Does it work perfectly? No. But each time we enact legislation like this, we get closer and closer to a system that is truly accountable and serving taxpayers correctly. We're not going to get there overnight, but the tools that we keep building into these laws are now paying dividends, and they're allowing us to do things like push for a better tax filing season, the third tax filing season affected by the pandemic, and taxpayers need help.
So let's talk about the Taxpayer First Act for a minute, because a lot of people believe that, Joe Biden has dismantled a lot of this. We know that everything changes in the IRS and now saying, hey, if you're not careful, your tax refund is going to be delayed. We go on and on about this. How impactful is it still, and how much impact will it have going forward?
Well, one of the things that the Taxpayer First Act constructed was an independent office of appeals. This is an office that allows taxpayers to launch an appeal of audit results from the IRS outside of the court system. So you don't have to hire a lawyer. You don't have to be versed yourself in tax law and procedure to go ahead and file an appeal. It helps to have a professional with you as you do that, but it is supposed to be an expedited process for a taxpayer's voice to be heard when they disagree with the IRS's conclusions in an audit. Well, this independent office of appeals was stood up shortly after Taxpayer First Act passed in 2019. It has been under-resourced, unfortunately, but it has made a difference in a number of taxpayer situations where they say to themselves, okay, the IRS is saying I owe $5,000, $7,000, $10,000 as a result of this audit. I can't afford to hire a lawyer who might charge me $5,000, $7,000, $10,000 just to beat the IRS in court. I can use this process for a lot less money to prove my point and possibly get my money back. These offices are very important to have, not only staffed across the country, but augmented by other things that we have fought for over the years. The National Taxpayer Advocates Office, which was started up over 25 years ago, has made a tremendous difference in resolving hundreds of thousands of tax identity theft cases. The fact that we allow taxpayers now to recover damages from the IRS in court if they act recklessly and intentionally. That's not a perfect process, but that was embedded into the law about 30 years ago and has been modified in favor of taxpayers subsequently. This is all gradual, painfully slow progress sometimes, but we always take advantage of those opportunities, because if we can help just one taxpayer out of trouble with the Internal Revenue Service and allow them to prevail and get justice, it's worth it.
So this is called Office of the Taxpayer Advocate, right? And they have them all over the country because they're in different states, right?
Yes, yes. Together with the Independent Office of Appeals and the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administration, these are all various parts of the tax system that help hold the IRS accountable when it crosses a line in its behavior with taxpayers. And again, there are folks out there who are going to say, yeah, but we're still very vulnerable. I agree with you, each and every one of you, that there is a whole lot of work left to do here. But we have to, again, make sure that when we have an opportunity to get a law passed that will start curbing the behavior of the tax agency and its reckless actions, we need to take that opportunity.
And when we talk about an office of the taxpayer advocate, at first you think, well, wow, why do we need that? That's just more government. In a way, yes, but at the same time, these acts as vanguards, these acts as checks and balances a little bit. If you get rid of the IRS entirely, okay, we don't need it, fine, which is where I would personally want to see us go. To get rid of the IRS entirely, I would like to use apportionment taxes and tariffs at the border to pay for the proper role of government. I wouldn't have an IRS at all, personally. I believe with apportionment taxes, the states could collect apportionment taxes and then pass their portion of the money to the federal government very easily. I also believe that tariffs at the border and taxes on others who want to do business with the greatest economy in the world, those are what I would advocate for. But we're not there yet, ladies and gentlemen. We've got a long time to go. In the meantime, when you got the wolf at your door, the IRS, right? When you got the wolf at your door, wouldn't you like an office of the taxpayer advocate to help you ensure they behave? Pete Sepp, president of NTU, with me, National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org, on your radio in seconds.
How many times do I have to tell you?
I swear, it just goes in one ear and out the other.
Don't you understand English?
Your children are probably too polite to tell you.
Hello, those things on the side of your head aren't turnips.
But they get just as frustrated when you won't listen to them as you do when they won't listen to you.
Do I need to speak slower?
In fact, few things show children how much they're valued and respected more than a parent's willingness to listen.
Tell me what you did at work today.
Studies show when parents listen, children develop better listening skills themselves. They also tend to have more self-confidence and are more likely to avoid alcohol and drugs.
Now sit down here and tell me all about it.
When you really listen, love is what they'll hear.
Thank you for sharing that with me.
From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. For more tips on strengthening your family, visit family.mormon.org.
Abby Johnson was once director of a Planned Parenthood clinic in Bryan, Texas. After a moral crisis, she quit, and now she campaigns against what she once endorsed.
They implement abortion quotas in all of their clinics.
What do you mean, quotas?
You have to perform a certain number of abortions every month. One of the reasons that I left...
Are they explicit about that?
Yes. It's in your budget, right there on the line item. One of the reasons I left Planned Parenthood was because in a budget meeting, I was told to double that abortion quota. And for me, as someone who had spoken to the media and had said, you know, we're about reducing the number of abortions, we're about, you know, prevention, all of these other services, I was shocked.
So since you actually worked at a Planned Parenthood, give us some sense of the relative number of abortions.
Okay, abortions, Planned Parenthood provides over 330,000 abortions a year. They are the largest single abortion provider in our country.
Back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. We're talking to Pete Sepp, president of NTU, National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org, doing a phenomenal job. We're talking about enacted in July 2019, the Taxpayers First Act, TFA, is the most significant legislation to changing the structure of the IRS and the tax system since 1998. We also talked about the Office of the Taxpayer Advocate and how important that really is, Hey, I wish we didn't have to have these things. But you know what? It reminds me a little bit of all kinds of discussions. You know, for example, you know, hey, we don't want sex education taught in schools. But if it's going to be taught, let's teach abstinence. That's an example of what we're talking about a little bit. Or you know what? I'd love government school to be gone. But you know what? If somebody says, hey, we can have school vouchers, you can have choice. Well, I'm not really for the money going to your school either, but... hey, it's better that at least we have school choice. It isn't perfect. It's far from. In fact, to some degree, it even points in the wrong direction to a great degree. But at the same time, we've got to do things incrementally. America didn't get broken in one day. Okay? They incrementally advanced their agenda. We need to do the same. So the Office of the Taxpayer Advocate is fantastic, and we need more of those kind of efforts, and we need to incrementally make gains. Pete?
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. And I can tell you that I get frustrated with this whole process myself, having to stand by and say day after day, well, wouldn't it just be a good idea if we started with a clean slate of a tax system, design something that's a lot more rational, that's a lot more transparent, that's a lot more accountable. That's not the world we can live in, unfortunately. Here I am speaking to you, and I can actually see the outline of what's called the Netherlands Carillon, which is a big gong clock that's in a park that is right next to the Senate side of the U.S. Capitol. We are that close to the action here on Capitol Hill. And I can tell you, there are many lawmakers who are saying things like, we need to reevaluate the entire tax system. We need to go in a direction of indirect taxes and apportion taxes among the states. Getting there is going to take a long time. These same good folks will tell you, as we pursue those kinds of goals, we need to also think about the here and now and what we can do to reform the system to make it work a little better for taxpayers. I don't think that will diminish at all the notion that taxpayers want much bigger reforms. It's not like we're going to give people a piece of candy or a cookie and they'll say, oh, that's good enough, I'm happy now. No, they're going to realize, hey, we can do even better, even though we've only made a little bit of progress.
Yeah, it's kind of like instead of just giving somebody a cookie, eventually it's like, hey, we can make cookies, you know. And then after a while, it's like, hey, we can sell cookies too. And what you do is you back into this economic prosperity that people start to realize. That's what changes the game, Pete.
Yes, exactly. Once people have tools of accountability to say to the Internal Revenue Service, I think you're wrong, here's why, and I have a process where I'm on equal ground with your opinion, that's not necessarily going to say to people, oh, the tax system is entirely fixed. If anything, it's going to open a lot more eyes, and folks are going to say, yeah, we have all these protections in place, but we wouldn't need them if we had a system that at its base functioned more accountably. I think that that's what's going to be the outcome of these incremental changes. People are going to want more change, and they're going to realize, more importantly, that they can do it. The fact that you take one step means you can take another and another and another, and soon you're down the pathway much further than you think you are.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would submit to you that this is something that we can all make a difference in, too. There's a lot of areas in government where we feel disenfranchised, where we feel like we can't really do much about it. It's like, hey, it's the way it is, and I don't like it, but there's nothing I can do. This is something entirely different. This is where you can be involved at the general government level. You can be involved at your state level. You can be involved at your county level. You can be involved at your city level. I mean, there's so many ways for people to get involved here, and a little bit of work makes a lot of difference, Pete.
Yes, it absolutely does. And let me point out, Sam, that we've discussed for a segment and a half now what's going on at the federal level with the IRS. There are a whole lot of things happening at the state level, very quietly almost, because there's so much news about the pandemic, and now we have the situation over in Ukraine. We have inflation that people are concerned about. But beneath that surface, a lot of legislative activity has been going on in places like Iowa and North Dakota and West Virginia and Mississippi and Louisiana. Many states across this country are dramatically reshaping their tax systems. In fact, just to use Iowa as an example, there are competing plans in the legislature to cut the state income tax by more than half and perhaps put it on the path to elimination. There are 9 states out of 50 in this country that do not have a tax on wages, a broad-based income tax. We could very well see this year or next that number being added to by 3, 4. We may have a dozen states without a broad-based wage tax by the time the 2-year period is out, ending in, say, 2023.
Why do you, and I'm asking this question on purpose, why do you name specific states as taking the lead in some of this? And I think the answer has to do with the local involvement of we the people. I don't think it just happens. I don't think they're just states that love to lower taxes. You know, state by nature likes to increase taxes and stuff. But I think it has to do with the people that are willing to get involved and take action, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. In Iowa, for example, there has long been a very strong taxpayer organization there called Iowans for Tax Relief. In fact, their chairman, David Stanley, and founder, he passed away several years ago, but he was part of the leadership of National Taxpayers Union. We were very strong allies of his, and time after time, Iowans for Tax Relief encountered roadblocks to their mission. They encountered setbacks. They've attempted constitutional amendments to limit taxes and spending. They've actually backed candidates who say that they would work hard for taxpayers. And yet, once they got into office, they encountered challenges from the system and didn't get as far as they thought. But they persisted year after year. They kept working hard, and now they're on the verge of major success. They've already enacted major tax relief in the past 2 years, but now they have the opportunity to even more dramatically reshape the way they tax in Iowa. And, you know, again, having a citizen group there, no matter what the political trade winds might be, no matter what the economic situation might be, having that group in place, constantly watching government, constantly pushing public officials to do better on fiscal policy, that's made a huge difference.
Constantly reminding of accountability and transparency, and these things are critical as well. So, Pete, I've been having an internal debate with myself. What's a worse state, a state that has an income tax or a state that has a property tax? Both of them, in my opinion, those direct taxes on your income and or on your property violate the fundamentals of the proper role of government, in my opinion. That's why I don't reject taxes altogether, but I do say some taxes are more hostile, more abusive, more regulatory in nature than others. Which is worse, a state that has an income tax or a property tax?
Well, they both are bad ideas in their own right many times. I would say that the income tax edges out the property tax in terms of severity, drag on economic growth, loss of personal liberties. You can take a look, for example, at New Hampshire, which has no personal income tax at the state level, very low consumption taxes, but pretty high property taxes. I would much rather be in a place like New Hampshire than a place like New York or Georgia, which has reasonably moderate taxes, but on the other hand, has not yet tackled some of the high income taxes that plague that state. Or take a look at New Jersey, which has the worst of all taxes. High income, high property, high sales tax. Their economies perform terribly compared to those with lower taxes, especially lower income taxes.
I'm waiting for the first state to get rid of income and property taxes. That's the one I want to move to. Hang tight. We'll talk about it more with Pete Sepp, president of the National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org.
Pursuing liberty, using the Constitution as our guide. You're listening to Liberty News Radio. USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
Sanctions and diplomacy have failed. War has begun in Ukraine as Russia has launched a full-scale invasion. Ukrainian President Zelensky confirmed that military installations around the country were under attack, and he declared martial law. He advised his citizens to stay calm and stay at home. The army is doing its work, he urged Ukrainians. United States, United Nations Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield at a special session Wednesday night.
This is a perilous moment, and we are here for one reason and one reason only, to ask Russia to stop. Return to your borders. Send your troops and your tanks and your planes back to their barracks and hangars.
President Biden condemned Russia's unprovoked and unjustified attack by Russian military forces in a statement last night. Biden said the U.S. and allies are planning on Thursday to trigger the full scale of the sanctions that have been discussed over the last several weeks. USA Radio News.
Fever is a potential sign of COVID or the flu. And the Exergen Temporal Scanner Thermometer has been proven accurate with more than 100 clinical studies. Be vigilant and seek medical advice at the first sign of fever. Be accurate with Exergen. Exergen Temporal Scanners, available at Walmart and other fine retailers. Learn more at Exergen.com. That's Exergen.com. Exergen is changing the way the world takes temperature.
The greatest radio shows of all time.
Frank Sinatra as Rocky Fortune.
Classic radio theater.
Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
The story of Dr. Kildare.
The Pepsodent Show, starring Bob Hope.
The greatest radio shows of all time. Classic radio theater with Wyatt Cox. On this radio station or wherever podcasts are served, just by searching for Classic Radio Theater with Wyatt Cox. That's Classic Radio Theater with Wyatt Cox.
Americans don't want the United States to play a large role in the Ukraine-Russia war.
A new AP-NORC poll released Wednesday found that only 26% of surveyed Americans support the United States playing a major role in the situation between Russia and Ukraine. According to the poll, 52% said the United States should play a minor role, and 20% said no role at all. From the USA Radio News Phoenix Bureau, I'm Tim Berg.
Moving forward with the fight against COVID-19.
Federal health officials and medical experts are mulling the potential need for a fourth COVID-19 vaccine, but many don't agree whether another booster is needed or will be effective. A senior Biden administration official tells Axios that the federal government is planning to test new vaccines, combining multiple COVID strains to determine what will offer the broadest coverage against future strains. In the USA Radio News Midwest Bureau, I'm Katie Lewis.
USA Radio News.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. Sam Bushman, Pete Sepp on your radio. We're talking about taxes. Governments always want to increase them. The people always want to decrease them. We got to make sure that we have more mojo than they do. That's all. We got to do so peacefully, kindly, respectfully, insistently, transparently, and with accountability. Wow, sounds like a tall order, ladies and gentlemen. But nothing's too tall of an order for we, the American people, if we decide to get involved in meaningful ways. Well, you got a partner in that solution, ladies and gentlemen. That is the National Taxpayers Union, ready to help you navigate the complicated realities of tax reform. Yeah, tax relief. NTU.org is your partner. So, Pete, we would take a state that has a low or no income tax. Even if we have property tax, it's better than income tax. You say there's nine states that don't have an income tax right now, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And they're concentrated in the South and the West, but you'll find them in all areas of the country. Alaska has no income tax, New Hampshire, Tennessee, Florida, Texas. Even Washington State, which, of course, is kind of a counterexample because they have no income tax there, but also very high sales and property tax burdens and certain other business taxes that make their overall tax climate a little difficult to abide by. So there are various examples of how states balance their tax systems, but still, by and large, if you lead with a high income tax in your state, you're leading with your chin, and you're going to get beat up economically by states that are a lot more competitive with lower taxes, specifically lower income and often lower property taxes.
All right. Who are the ones, the rest of the ones that don't have an income tax? You named about six of them. What are the rest of them?
Well, we've got Texas, we've got Wyoming, we've got South Dakota as well, and Nevada. So, again, all right. Concentrated out west and down south mostly, but there are a few in other parts of the country.
All right. How many states don't have a property tax?
There are zero. Every state has some kind of property tax. Now,
shame on them, huh?
Yeah, that's right. And the interesting part of this is that there's a mixture of states with high property tax burdens, but lower burdens of other tax. They manage to do all right. I mentioned New Hampshire, but then there are others with very low property taxes that you would not want to live in as a taxpayer. Hawaii is one of them. Very low property taxes, but the income and sales and other taxes will simply roll you over as a taxpayer. And they more than make up for any property tax relief you may be able to obtain. California is another example. The property tax burden is middle, actually closer to the bottom third of burdens, thanks to the Proposition 13 tax limitation measure that Howard Jarvis famously sponsored back in 1978. But that success has been limited because California has some of the worst income and sales taxes in the country. And the overall tax burden makes California a tough place to live in.
All right, so what are your worst states and best states? California, Hawaii, and New York, some of the worst states, right?
Yes. Oh, yes. And if you're looking for some of the best states from a taxpayer's perspective as well as an economic growth perspective, you constantly
Let me stop you there, Pete. By the way, believe it or not, is one and the same, right?
Yeah. Mostly they are. I mean, the economists will argue how strong the connection is, but even common sense will tell you that in a state where citizens and businesses are allowed to keep more of their own money, invest it, use it to grow their local economies, yeah, the performance there is going to be better. There are going to be more jobs. There are going to be better potentials for income growth, and that generally bears out. Places like Texas and Florida are gaining in population year after year, as well as new business starts and businesses moving there. Those businesses are taking their cash, their assets, their people, and shifting them generally from high tax states. We've seen Elon Musk in the news, for example, pulling out of California and going to Texas. That's repeated on a microcosmic scale by lots of businesses you've never heard of. And even places like Nevada and Utah benefit from that. Folks say, you know, I can move 100, 250 miles to a place where I can set up shop, I can have a home for less money, and I won't get taxed as heavily. Why do I need to stay in a place like California, especially when modern technologies allow me to do business, most kinds of business at least, in almost any place in the country?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, the top 10 most tax-friendly U.S. states, you know, we got to look at that because you got to balance all this, folks. Taxes have long been at the forefront of the minds of many American adults, and you got to kind of think about where you want to live in relation to those taxes. And I've heard people tell me, hey, I'm not moving to this state because they have an income tax. I'm not moving to this state because they have a property tax or whatever. And I think it matters. But ladies and gentlemen, you got to take a complete analysis of this. Okay, you got to calculate the taxes for a person with the average or median income, 60 grand, for example, for income tax calculations, etc. And you got to kind of start with that, don't you? You got to look at, you got to put some parameters together so that you can get kind of an equality or parity of discussion. Right, Pete?
Yes, absolutely. One of the better ways to do that is to take a look at what's called the State Business Tax Climate Index. That's compiled every year by an organization we respect very much, the Tax Foundation. And they have all kinds of factors that go into their ranking, not only income and property taxes, but the types of taxes that businesses might pay. How heavy is the unemployment tax, for example? How do they calculate income for the basis of taxation? That can matter a lot. You know, you could have a 10% income tax rate, but if you have a whole slew of deductions and credits before you apply that rate, your burden might not be so high. And so they combine this into a comprehensive ranking. And in 2022, the 10 best states were Wyoming, South Dakota, Alaska, Florida, Montana, New Hampshire, Nevada, Tennessee, Indiana, and Utah.
Yeah, buddy. Now, there you go. We're 10th. We got a lot of work to do, though, don't we?
Yeah. There's still work to do, indeed. And, boy, if you want to hear the lowest ones, I don't think you'll be terribly surprised. Starting with the worst in the country and going backward, New Jersey, New York, California, Connecticut, Maryland, Minnesota, Arkansas, Vermont, Louisiana, and Hawaii.
I'm surprised about Arkansas and Louisiana, though.
Yeah, well, I think that both those states suffer from pretty difficult business tax systems, and in Louisiana, their parish system of government gives tremendous powers to local authorities to tax, and that makes things very difficult for residents there.
Yeah, it makes the society and the economy perish, I understand.
Oh, goodness.
All right. So is this the top 10 most tax-friendly states for retirement, or just in general, or what?
In general. And this, again, combines individual income tax, sales tax, property tax, unemployment tax, corporate tax, and several other factors into one big index, and that's overall. Now, you bring up a good point, Sam, in that retirees, for example, may have a very different concept of the tax burden. You know, if you own your home, for example, property taxes may be more important to you than you think, because even if you no longer have a mortgage, the property tax bill shows up in the mail, and you often have to pay that thing either in total or maybe in two installments. You can't break it out over 12 mortgage payments anymore, and that can be a pretty big hit for seniors. So retirees tend to look for states that are low in property taxes. Perhaps they look for states where their income tax systems exempt pensions and Social Security. There are states that do that. And so you have to look for states that are particular to your situation sometimes.
You got to also look not only of just the tax burden, but you got to look at the cost of housing. In other words, the cost of property. If I'm in Hawaii or California where the cost of property is really expensive, that adds to the burden too. We'll talk about that with Pete Sepp in seconds on your radio.
As a parent, is receiving a faith-based, character-focused education for your children difficult to find? Do you believe that godly principles should be a central component in your child's education? Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character. For over 40 years, American Heritage School has been educating both hearts and minds, bringing out academic excellence. This is the school where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. With American Heritage School's Advanced Distance Education Program, distance is no longer an issue. With an accredited LDS-oriented curriculum from kindergarten through 12th grade, your children can attend from anywhere in the world. American Heritage School will prepare your child for more than a job. It will prepare them for life. To learn more, visit American-Heritage.org. That's American-Heritage.org.
Scott Bradley here. Most Americans are painfully aware that the nation is on the wrong track and in dire straits. Unfortunately, most political pundits only nibble around the edges when they claim to address the issues. Even worse, many of the so-called solutions are simply rewarmed servings of what got us into the mess we currently face. And the politicians think we're so gullible and naive that we'll buy their lies that they have reformed and now understand where they led us astray. Unfortunately, the truth of the matter is that they simply wish to continue to hold power. The solution to America's challenges is found in returning to the timeless principles found in the United States Constitution. My book and lecture series will reawaken in Americans an understanding and love of the principles which made this nation the freest, most prosperous, happiest, and most respected nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com and order my book and lectures to begin the restoration of this great nation.
All right, back with you live, ladies and gentlemen. So what I'm saying is, right before the pause, we'll have Pete take off on this. You know, you got to look at the dollar amounts to a property. If I have a house that cost me $200,000, and the taxes may be slightly higher, versus if I have a property that's worth $1 million and the taxes are, quote, percentage slightly lower, yeah, I'm still paying a lot more in the $1 million house deal, too. So you got to look at the economy and what the abuses of high taxes and the abuses on the economy that these kind of taxes take. And so you can't just look at property tax and isolate that, or income tax and isolate that. And that's what people do a lot. But I think that you got to look more at this kind of broader discussion that I'm talking about, is what abuse have these systems had on their economies. And you look at these states like New York or New Jersey or Connecticut or California or Hawaii, and they're incredibly expensive places to live. Even if you were to look at their property tax and say, oh, it's slightly lower than somebody else's, that's only part of the picture, Pete.
Yes, it is. And you can't always really dig out some of the hidden tax burdens that actually make that cost of living calculations much higher. And we often think, for example, that with a new home, well, it's the value of the land. It's scarce. Lots of people want to live in the same place. That drives the value up. Well, certainly it does. But there are also other factors at play that we may not understand. For example, what's the cost to put a house up in California, irrespective of the price of land? You have all kinds of requirements for environmentally friendly materials to be used. You have all kinds of taxes on construction workers because they're paying high wage taxes. You have heavy business taxes on the firm that might be digging the foundation of your new house. Well, they have to pass those along and the costs they charge for that kind of thing. So this is a constant feedback loop. We often don't necessarily consider that when we see a housing price for $500,000. We think, ah, just a popular area to live in. It's just that the land is expensive. Well, it's not always that. There are other factors at play here, and oftentimes big government is behind it.
Well, and when you look at the cost of living by state or the cost of living by city, ladies and gentlemen, that's a lot better of an indicator, just so you know. So they use the cost of living index, takes 100 as its basis, and says if it costs 100, I mean, if it's 100 in your city or state, then you're average. If you're below that, then you're less cost of living. If you're above that, you're higher cost of living. And I mean, the disparity in America is crazy. Some of them are down to like 80%, so 20% less to live. Arkansas and some of the Mississippi and a lot of the southern states are there. Some of the western states used to be there or whatever. But you look at New York and California and Connecticut and some of these places, and man, they're way above. They're in the 200 and something range cost of living. It costs over double, almost triple to live in some of those places and stuff like that. It really relates to salary and to reality. And so I would encourage people, as people are looking for places to move, unprecedentedly, people have decided to move because of COVID, where they don't have to stay where they work anymore and stuff like that. So things are changing in the country big time. I think we can take advantage of this when it comes to educating taxpayers and then having them take action to have accountability, Pete.
Yes, and this is going to be, I think, a hard-learned lesson from many governments. And You can see it right now brewing with commuter taxes. During the pandemic, something on the order of 3 million individuals who used to commute over a state border to and from work no longer did so. You're talking about places like people who live in New Hampshire, a state we were just discussing with a low income tax burden, and Massachusetts. That's a very common thing where they work in Massachusetts, a very high tax state, but they live in New Hampshire. They commute back and forth. Massachusetts wanted to take commuter taxes from those folks, and they did. You find that between Kentucky and Tennessee, between Texas and Arkansas to some degree. This happens in a lot of states. Well, 3 million people no longer were commuting across state borders to do that during the pandemic. And the states collecting commuter taxes said, well, we don't care if you're no longer coming here. We still want our money. We feel that that's incredibly unfair. There was a case in the Supreme Court that our new Taxpayer Defense Center filed a friend of the court brief in the state of New Hampshire versus Massachusetts over this entire issue. And it was dismissed as a case because Massachusetts decided that they would repeal the emergency tax provisions that were taxing commuters who weren't actually commuting into their state. But the issue remains because other states are still doing it. This is going to go back through the courts, and it is just one of the ways that our changing, evolving economy gives taxpayers more power and more opportunities to decide where they're going to live, where they're going to work. And states can only keep doing really inadvisable things like Massachusetts tried to do for so long before they start suffering economic consequences. People still can vote with their feet in this country. They have been doing so. They've been leaving high tax states like New York and New Jersey and going to places like Texas, Florida, and elsewhere where the business, economic, and tax climates are better. States can't stop that, no matter how hard they try, and it's going to be increasingly difficult for them in this kind of post-pandemic economy where there's a lot more remote work, people no longer going into offices, and a lot more mobile work where people may have several jobs or maybe working as contractors rather than employees in one fixed office.
What we need to do as taxpayer advocates and as taxpayer protectors and defenders and whatever other words you want to use for this, what we need to do is really educate the states to their responsibility. What they should be doing, in my opinion, Pete, is we should really be helping them understand it's a race to the sweet spot. Hey, the first state that gets rid of an income tax and a property tax, they're going to be the place to flock to. The first state that gets out of the way and lets business prosper, what we need to do is have them race to the compete box, if you will, to say, you know what, and Texas is kind of doing that already. We see that with, as you mentioned, Elon Musk a couple of times. You know, they basically said, hey, you know what, Elon, come to Texas. We'll take care of you, buddy. We got a friendly business environment that's going to be good for you and good for your employees and good for everybody else. Come on down to Texas where the weather's good and the economy's great. And okay, we need to have these states competing on that. We need to really push that to be kind of the discussion, because when that competition happens, that's where we start to make real gains.
Yes, it's absolutely the case. And we need to remember, there are many folks who are probably saying, well, yeah, but I live in a really rotten tax climate like Illinois. Well, you don't have to necessarily think of starting a movement in Illinois where you're totally isolated as a taxpayer. You brought up tax competition, Sam, and that's the beauty of it. If we, for example, were able to get Iowa to uh, enact legislation that starts it on the path of eliminating its income tax. Now you have Iowa and South Dakota without income taxes. There's a movement to do that in Wisconsin. They may have difficulty with the governor there, Evers, vetoing such legislation, but that political situation could change. Missouri is now pushing a major tax reform effort. All of those states doing that at once in that region will put tremendous pressure on Illinois to finally start reversing some of its worst tax policies. They've been losing people and businesses for quite some time. That loss rate will increase dramatically if states neighboring them or directly on their border start taking action to reduce their own tax burdens. That's also the beauty of this taxpayer movement. We are not alone. We are not isolated. The actions of taxpayers in one state can benefit taxpayers in another.
And we, the people, have the ultimate responsibility for that competition to take place. We can vote with our feet. We can let them know. It was very public about Elon Musk's move. We can make our businesses and our, just the same. We can really advocate for this and force this competition to be kind of the order of the day. And I think states will come to the table, though. It's not lost on them that people are traveling less to their states. People are commuting less. People are moving to the states less. California is bleeding families big time right now. You know what? People are really unable to handle the outflux. Is that a word? Outflux? I guess it is. Anyway, of people, and they know it. And so now's the time to capitalize on this too, Pete.
Yes, it absolutely is. And it can start at the state. It can start even at the local level. Within your state, there are cities that effectively tax their residents at a much higher rate than counties or communities surrounding them. Los Angeles has a commuter tax and an in-city payroll tax that's one of the worst in the entire state. If you're worried about taking on taxpayer issues at the state level, you can take them on at the local level and say, look, we've got to get rid of this city-level income tax or this business franchise tax that is chasing people out into the county, barely 5 miles from the city center. Those are things that you can start out with and build a movement that translates into city by city and then county by county and then statewide and then regionally and then nationwide. We've seen it happen before in American history. There have been several waves of the modern post-war tax revolt. There was one from Proposition 13 in the 70s. There was another in the 1990s, begun primarily by Colorado and its taxpayer Bill of Rights. Where's the next wave going to start and when it's going to start? I think it's going to be in the middle of America, and I think it's starting now.
We also need to remember, ladies and gentlemen, sometimes they call them sin taxes. Sometimes they call them entertainment taxes, whatever you call them. They are brutal in most places, too. People don't even realize it just because it's only on your entertainment and you're not paying attention as much. But it's business and entertainment taxes. That's a real huge one. And that's the one I believe that, you know what, economies will realize if they were to reduce them or become gentle on those taxes sooner than later. They would realize a huge influx in entertainment. People don't realize how that adds to even the average tax burden like nobody's business, Pete. Final point's yours.
Yeah, absolutely. And the first step folks can take is to simply realize you can form your own local level taxpayer group with just a few people. We have a booklet that can show you how and get you going down that runway to success.
There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much, Pete Sepp. Always a phenomenal job. Pete Sepp, ladies and gentlemen, president of NTU, the National Taxpayers Union, NTU.org. For Sam and Pete, God save the Republic of the United States of America.